Hare Hare
Every morning before breakfast, the Mullick family members would visit the temple to see the deity of Radha Govinda. They would offer cooked rice, kachoris, and vegetables on a large platter, and would then distribute the prasad to the deity's morning visitors from the neighborhood. Among the daily visitors was Abhayacharan, accompanying his mother, father, or accompanied by his mother, father, or servant. Srila Prabhupada. I used to ride in the same perambulator with Siddheshwar Mullick. He used to call me Moti, which means pearl, and his nickname was Subhidi. And the servant pushed us together. If one day his friend did not see me, if this friend did not see me, he would become mad. He would not go in the perambulator without me. We would not separate even for a moment. Like Siddheshwar Mullick, he was one of the, you know, from the main Mullick family, is very, very prominent like that. As the servant pushed the baby carriage into the wide expanse of Harrison Road is what Mahatma Gandhi Road used to be called. After, means all the Indian, these cities, because they were established by the British, then they had, you know, all the roads were named by the British. And so the, whatever was the biggest roads, and the British would have named after very prominent personalities or something. And so then when there was, after independence, Indian independence, then always whatever was the biggest road or the main road in the city, that was always called Mahatma Gandhi Road. So every village, I mean every town and city you go to, there's a Mahatma Gandhi Road. So Harrison Road became Mahatma Gandhi Road or MG Road. When it came in the 70s, then many of the old taxi drivers still called it Harrison Road, you know, like that. As the servant pushed the baby carriage into the wide expanse of Harrison Road, timing his crossing between the bicycles and horse-drawn hackneys, the two children in the pram gazed up at the fair sky and tall trees across the road. No tall trees anymore. Sounds and sights of the hackneys with their large wheels spinning over the road caught the fascinating attention of the two children. The servant steered the carriage towards the arched gateway within the red sandstone wall bordering the Radha Govinda Mandir. And as Abhaya and his friend rode underneath the ornate metal arch and into the courtyard, they saw high above them two stone lions, the heralds and protectors of the temple compound, their right paws extended. In the courtyard was a circular drive, and on the oval lawn were lampposts with gas lights and a statue of a young woman in robes. Sharply chirping sparrows flitted in the shrubs and trees or hopped across the grass, pausing to peck the ground, while choruses of pigeons cooed, sometimes abruptly flapping their wings overhead. sailing off to another perch or descending to the courtyard. Voices chattered as Bengalis moved to and fro, dressed in simple cotton saris and white dhotis. Someone paused by the carriage to amuse the golden-skinned boys with their dark, shining eyes, but most people were passing by quickly, going into the temple. The heavy double doors leading into the inner courtyard were open, and the servant eased the carriage wheels down a foot-deep step and proceeded through the foyer. When you come in, there's a walk. It means you have the arch that's on the main road. When you go in, then you have all these, you know, all these decorations and that. Then there's an inner gate where there's seats on each side and that, like in we see in most of these big houses and that. That wherever the entrance is, and it has this, these seats on both sides, so you have a door at one end and at the other. And then going through that, then it drops down into a courtyard, and Garuda's there and everything, and then you get to the temple. Proceeding through the foyer, they went down another step and into the bright sunlight of the main courtyard. There they faced a stone statue of Garuda, perched on a four-foot column. This carrier of Vishnu, Garuda, half man and half bird, kneeling on one knee, his hands folded prayerfully, his eagle's beak strong and his wings poised behind him. The carriage moved ahead past two servants sweeping and washing the stone courtyard. It was just a few paces across the courtyard to the temple. The temple area itself, open like a pavilion, was a raised platform with a stone roof supported by stout pillars, 15 feet tall. At the left end of the temple pavilion stood a crowd of worshippers, viewing the deities on the altar. The servant pushed the carriage closer, lifted the two boys out, and then, holding their hands, escorted them reverentially before the deities. Srila Prabhupada. I can remember standing at the doorway of Radha Govinda temple, saying prayers to Radha Govinda Murti. I would watch for hours together. The deity was so beautiful with his slanted eyes. So we have to remember, perambulator is a baby carriage, right? So that means they're the size of kids that go in baby carriages. And so Prabhupada would say he would offer prayers and, you know, he could stand there for hours watching the deities, right? So we have to understand the context of what's going on here. Radha and Govinda, freshly bathed and dressed, now stood on their silver throne amidst vases of fragrant flowers. Govinda was about 18 inches high, and Radharani, standing to his left, was slightly smaller. Both were golden. Radha and Govinda both stood in the same gracefully carved dancing pose, right leg bent at the knee and right foot placed in front of the left. It means even Radharani's like that. You know, like our Radharani, she has one hand down and one hand offering something to Krishna. So here she's like that, and at the same time as she's got her foot like Krishna crossed in front of the left, and she's like that. Radharani, dressed in a luxurious silk sari, held up her reddish right palm in benediction, and Krishna in his silk jacket and dhoti played on a golden flute. At Govinda's lotus feet were green tulsi leaves with pulp of sandalwood. Hanging around their lordships' necks and reaching down almost to the lotus feet were several garlands of fragrant night-blooming jasmines, delicate, trumpet-like blossoms resting lightly on Radha and Govinda's divine forms. Their necklaces of gold, pearls, and diamonds shimmered. Radharani's bracelets were of gold, and both she and Krishna wore gold embroidered silk chadars about their shoulders. The flowers in their hands and their hair were small and delicate, and the silver crowns on their heads were bedecked with jewels. Radha and Krishna were slightly smiling. Beautifully dressed, dancing on their silver throne beneath a silver canopy, and surrounded by flowers, to Abhai they appeared most attractive. Life outside on Harrison Road and beyond was forgotten. In the courtyard the birds went on chirping and visitors came and went, but Abhai stood silently, absorbed in seeing the beautiful forms of Krishna and Radharani, the Supreme Lord and His eternal consort. Then the kirtan began, devotees chanting and playing on drums and kartals. Abhay and his friend kept watching as the pujaris offered incense, its curling smoke hanging in the air. Then a flaming lamp, a conch shell, a handkerchief, flowers, a whisk, and a peacock fan. Finally, the pujari blew the conch shell loudly, and the Artik ceremony was over. When Abhay was 1.5 years old, he fell ill with typhoid. Right, so this means, this is chronological, so this means when he was 1.5, he got typhoid. So the previous pastime we were talking about was before 1.5. So when he's before 1.5, he could stand there for hours watching Radha Govind in the Artik, offering prayers, and remembering that he did that. Right? Yeah. Well, I don't know if it comes up here, but he says his first memory was when he was 6 months old. Like that. I remember sitting on, I think, some auntie's lap or something. When Abhay was 1.5 years old, he fell ill with typhoid. The family physician, Dr. Bose, prescribed chicken broth. No, Gormohan protested. I cannot allow it. Yes, otherwise he will die, said the doctor. But we are not meat eaters, Gormohan pleaded. We cannot prepare chicken in our kitchen. Don't mind, Mr. Bose said. I shall prepare it at my house and bring it in a jar, and you simply... Gormohan assented. If it is necessary for my son to live... So the doctor came with his chicken broth and offered it to Abhay, who immediately began to vomit. All right, the doctor admitted. Never mind, this is no good. Gormohan then threw the chicken broth away, and Abhay gradually recovered from the typhoid without having to eat meat.
Even at that age,
probably. Yeah. What he wanted to eat, yeah. On the roof of Abhay's maternal grandmother's house was a little garden with flowers, greenery, and trees. Along with the other grandchildren, 2-year-old Abhay took pleasure in watering the plants with the sprinkling can. But his particular tendency was to sit alone amongst the plants. He would find a nice bush and make a sitting place. So he wasn't much, because it's one of the symptoms of knowledge, is that one is not overly absorbed in like social... a social environment, you know. It's a, you know, big outside, you know. So, though one can work in the Lake Prabhupada, is very, very expert in dealing in those. But the preference is, you know, to be on your own, to chant, or be in an environment where there's, you know, like hearing and chanting. Like at the temple, very busy, so many people there, but he's very happy to sit there. Like that. One day when Abhay was 3, he narrowly escaped a fatal burning. He was playing with matches in front of his house when he caught his cloth on fire. Suddenly a man appeared and put the fire out. Abhay was saved, although he retained a small scar on his leg. In 1900, when Abhay was 4, a vehement plague hit Calcutta. Dozens of people died every day, and thousands evacuated the city. When there seemed no way to check the plague, an old Babaji organized Hare Krishna Samkirtan all over Calcutta. Regardless of religion, Hindu, Muslim, and Christian, and Parsi, all joined, and a large party of chanters traveled from street to street, door to door, chanting the names Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The group arrived at Gormohan's house at 151 Harrison Road, and Gormohan eagerly received them. Although Abhay was a little child, his head reaching only up to the knees of the chanters, he also joined in the dancing. Shortly after this, the plague subsided. Gormohan was a pure Vaishnava, and he raised his son to be Krishna conscious. Since his own parents had also been Vaishnavas, Gormohan had never touched meat, fish, eggs, tea, or coffee. His complexion was fair and his disposition reserved. At night, he would lock up his cloth shop, set a bowl of rice in the middle of the floor to satisfy the rats so they would not chew the cloth in their hunger, and return home. Right? So he has a cloth shop. So then in the middle of the floor, he put a bowl of, I think, you know, dry, you know, just rice. And so then the rats will eat that instead of eating the cloth, because if it comes between grains and cloth, the rat will pick the grains. Because it's said that someone takes birth as a rat from stealing grains. You steal grains and you take birth, because that's what rats do, right? They steal grains. So, you know, that's,
yeah, they eat the dung upstairs.
Yeah, they eat the dung. There he would read from Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the main scriptures of Bengali Vaishnavas, and chant on his japa beads, and worship the deity of Lord Krishna. He was gentle and affectionate, and would never punish Abhay. Even when obliged to correct him, Gaur Mohan would first apologize. "You are my son, so now I must correct you. It is my duty." Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's father would chastise him, "So don't mind." Srila Prabhupada, "My father's income was no more than 250 rupees, but there was no question of need. In the mango season, when we were children, we would run through the house playing, and we would grab mangoes as we were running through." "And all through the day, we would eat mangoes. We wouldn't have to think, 'Can I have a mango?' My father always provided food. Mangoes were 1 rupee a dozen."
Not bad. It's not a kilo, a dozen. So that's like,
3 kilos.
Yeah, 3 kilos. So that means 30 pice a kilo. They're a little more now. How much are they now?
Now, in season, Himsagar, what?
28? In season. 28 a kilo. So that would mean
100 times. No.
Three times that.
Because 30 pice a kilo.
Oh, 30 pice a kilo. Yeah, so it's a...
300
Yeah. A little bit more expensive. So that means if... So 250 rupees would give you, you know, a good amount of money then.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, you could probably times it by 300 or 3,000.
Yeah.
To work out today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that means 2.5 lakhs a month, right? Okay. They'd do okay.
Life was simple, but there was always plenty. We were middle class, but receiving 4 or 5 guests daily. My father gave 4 daughters in marriage, and there was no difficulty for him. Maybe it was not a very luxurious life, but there was no scarcity of food or shelter or cloth. Daily he purchased 2.5 kilograms of milk. He did not like to purchase retail, but would purchase a year's supply of coal by the cartload. We were happy, not that because we did not purchase a motor car, we were unhappy. My father used to say, "God has 10 hands. If he wants to take away from you, with 2 hands, how much can you protest? And when he wants to give you with 10 hands, then with your 2 hands, how much can you take?" Right. So he's pointing out is that life is, if it's, you take care of the essentials, you know, you hear your food, your cloth, what do you say?
Roof.
Yeah, shelter. Then everything's okay, you know, because otherwise, what is it that kids aren't looking for anything fancy and not like this? So, therefore, it works very nicely. So it's the mood that's most important, like that. It's whatever your situation, if you're satisfied with it, that this is what Krishna has given, then everything works very nicely. Everybody's very comfortable. But if you're not satisfied with what you have, then the children will also become uncomfortable. Right? Because ultimately, no matter how much you have, you can always desire to have more than that. So it doesn't matter if you have very little or a lot. It'll always be less than, you know, what you would consider ideal. My father would rise a little late, around 7 or 8. Then after taking bath, he would go purchasing. Then from 10 o'clock to 1 in the afternoon, he was engaged in puja. Then he would take his lunch and go to business. And in the business shop, he would take a little rest for 1 hour. He would come home from business at 10 o'clock at night. And then again, he would do puja. Actually, his real business was puja. For livelihood, he did some business. But puja was his main business. We would be sleeping, and father would be doing artik, ding, ding, ding. We would hear the bell and wake up and see him bowing down before Krishna.
Right. Still an 8-hour day.
Yeah.
One day with an hour rest.
Yeah. Yeah. But it'd just start later. So it's probably someone else would open the shop or this or that. Because, you know, not much would happen in the morning. Cloth, generally most is happening in the afternoon or evening. Like that. Yeah, so Prabhupada mentions that 8 hours, you know, for occupation. And then the rest of the time should be, you know, in your sadhana and whatever time one needs with the family. Once not otherwise. Like that. And then even though he's grihastha, his main still is still worshipping the deity, doing those things. Like that. Gormohan, yeah, so one can understand is, since that's the prominent thing, then being situated nicely in devotional service, nicely in being able to deal in relationships and everything, that's what's most important. You can't give up sadhana and relationships to get educated so that you can get a job to take care of, you know, your chanting and your relationships. Does that make sense? So you have to, that's constant. One's the ashram activities are the prominent activities. Varna is there so that one can properly maintain the ashram activities. Gormohan wanted Vaishnav goals for his son. He wanted Abhay to become a servant of Radharani, to become a preacher of the Bhagavatam, and to learn the devotional art of playing mridanga. He regularly received sadhus in his home, and he would always ask them, "Please bless my son so that Srimati Radharani may be pleased with him and grant him her blessings." So this is, and we have to remember, this is a business family. Right? You know, they're not big Brahmin families. This is a business family. And he has his, and he wants his son to be a preacher of Bhagavatam and the devotee of Srimati Radharani. Enjoying each other's company, father and son used to walk as far as 10 miles, saving the 5 paisa tram fare. On the beach, they used to see a yogi who for years had sat in one spot without moving. One day the yogi's son was sitting there, and people had gathered around. The son was taking over his father's sitting place. Gormohan gave the yogi a donation and asked their blessings for his son. Interesting things. That was his that was his spot. Huh? When Abhay's mother said she wanted him to become a British lawyer when he grew up, which mean he would have to go to London to study, one of the Mullah's uncles thought it was a good idea. But Gormohan would not hear of it. If Abhay went to England, he would be influenced by European dress and manners. He would learn drinking and woman hunting. Gormohan objected, "I do not want his money." From the beginning of Abhay's life, Gormohan had introduced his plan. He had hired a professional mridanga player to teach Abhay the standard rhythms for accompanying kirtan. Rajani had been skeptical. Rajani is Srila Prabhupada's mother. "What is the purpose of teaching such a young child to play the mridanga? It is not important." But Gormohan had his dream of a son who would grow up singing bhajans, playing mridanga, and speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam. When Abhay sat to play the mridanga, even with his left hand and right hands extended as far as he could, his small hands would barely reach the drum heads at the opposite ends of the drum. Like that, yeah.
I always would see little kids, sometimes they come to the temple and they play on this end and they lead and then hit this end and lean over and play this end and this end. Like that. With his right wrist, he would flick his hand just as the teacher instructed, and his fingers would make a high-pitched sound, teeny, teeny, ta. And he would strike the left drum head with his open left hand, boom, boom. With practice and age, he was gradually learning the basic rhythms, and Gaur Mohan looked on with pleasure. Abhay was an acknowledged pet child of both his parents. In addition to his childhood names, Moti, Nandalal, Nandu, and Kocha, his grandmother called him Kachori Mook because of his fondness for kachoris, spicy vegetable-stuffed fried pastries popular in Bengal. Both his grandmother and mother would give him kachoris, which he kept in the many pockets of his little vest. The kachoris, stick in the pockets. He liked to watch the vendors cooking on the busy roadside and accept the kachoris from them and from the neighbors until all the inside and outside pockets of his vest were filled. As far as stuff.
The vests have a few pockets.
Yeah, they have quite a few pockets. So even in one pocket, you would think you'd get more than one kachori. Yeah, it depends how big they are. These are, I think, the custa kachoris. You know, the ones you don't roll. Yeah, you just take the dough and you put the filling and then you close them up and then they'll stay around like that and then you fry them like that. So Prabhupada liked those very much. Sometimes when Abhay demanded that his mother make him kachoris, she would refuse. Once she even sent him to bed. When Gaur Mohan came home and asked, "Where is Abhay?" Rajani explained how he had been too demanding, and she had sent him to bed without kachoris. "No, we should make them for him," his father replied. And he awoke Abhay and personally cooked puris and kachoris for him. Gaur Mohan was always lenient with Abhay and careful to see that his son got whatever he wanted. When Gaur Mohan returned home at night, it was his practice to take a little puffed rice, and Abhay would also sometimes sit with his father eating puffed rice. Right, this we notice here is this leniency is still, it's not like the modern leniency, because his leniency is not in, you know, his standards of Krishna consciousness, you know, his standards of what he wanted in the way of his son being trained in Krishna consciousness, right, like that. So it was just, he was very gentle in dealing, though if he needed he would chastise, but otherwise he was very gentle in his dealing. So, you know, that's very important. It's not that one's liberal and they do, and so therefore they can also do nonsense. That's not liberal. Liberal means is that, you know, what is needed to be done, you know, what is their, you know, interests and liking, you know, cultivating relationships, everything like this, that's taken care of. But things that are improper, then that's not allowed. And then proper direction here, when we see worshiping the deity, yeah, the sadhus, feeding the sadhus and then getting blessings for the son, you know, hoping that he'll study Bhagavatam, seeing that he doesn't get involved in occupations that will take him away from that, like that.
Could you say that leniency is like, from the senior to the junior, leniency in the relationship rather than in standards?
Yes, it's not a leniency in standards, it's kindness, you know, like that. It's just kindness that you want to see the other person taken care of and pleased, so then you know, whatever they need and want is taken care of. But the standards aren't altered like that. That works. So that we say is that he was very careful, because he was making the point is, okay, he could go to England, get a degree, become a barrister there and make lots of money. But then what's the use of that money if the son is not God conscious? Like that. So he was saying is, you know, he's not looking for, you know, money. He would rather his son be Krishna conscious than you know, very wealthy and not Krishna conscious. Like that.
Once, at a cost of 6 rupees, Gaur Mohan bought Abhay a pair of shoes imported from England. And each year, through a friend who traveled back and forth from Kashmir, Gaur Mohan would present his son a Kashmiri shawl with a fancy hand-sewn border. One day in the market, Abhay saw a toy gun he wanted. His father said no, and Abhay started to cry. All right, Gaur Mohan said, and he bought the gun. Then Abhay wanted another gun. You already have one, his father said. Why do you want another one? One for each hand, Abhay cried. And he lay down in the street, kicking his feet. When Gaur Mohan agreed to get the second gun, Abhay was pacified. One for each hand. Funny, right? So he would take care and get, you know, nice things. They would be careful about it, but they would get nice things. So that's the point, is that even if one is not overly wealthy, it still is not that what one purchases is not of value, right? Because sometimes cheaper things, they don't do the work very well and they don't last very well. What it means is that, you know, he has one Kashmiri shawl, he doesn't have 20. You know, he has one pair of good shoes, he doesn't have so many. Does this make sense? So what is there is good. It's, you know, it's valuable. It does the work nicely. But you don't have extra. Does that make sense? So that's the position. Abhay's mother, Rajani, was 30 years old when he was born. Like her husband, she came from a long-established Gaudiya Vaishnava family. She was darker skinned than her husband, and whereas his disposition was cool, hers tended to be fiery. Abhay saw his mother and father living together peacefully. No deep marital conflict or complicated dissatisfaction ever threatened home. Rajani was chaste and religious-minded, a model housewife in the traditional Vedic sense, dedicated to caring for her husband and children. Abhay observed his mother's simple and touching attempts to ensure by prayers, by vows, and even by rituals that he continued to live. Whenever he was out, even to play, his mother, after dressing him, would put a drop of saliva on her finger and touch it to his forehead. Abhay never knew the significance of this act, but because she was his mother, he stood submissively, probably, quote, like a dog with its master, while she did it. Like Gaur Mohan, because always there's these, you know, normally what they do is they put a black dot, you know, this cudgel, they'll put, but there's something that's there to take any of the, you know, any bad feelings anyone may have or project at the child or anything like that. At Abhay's birth, Yeah, so here we see is that the father was very peaceful, mother was very, you know, much more fiery, as Prabhupada had mentioned here. But the house was peaceful. Everything went on nicely and all that. The whole point is that cooperation. So even though that fieriness is there, but, you know, that chastity, religious-minded, everything is there. So everybody works things out. That's the business, is to work things out, right? One must use one's intelligence, figure out a way that one must be worked out. Head is very heavy today. Heavier than normal. Maybe we should we weigh their heads to find out that they're not overweight or something?
Maybe, yeah. There's a few overweight heads.
I mean, now, what would be the cause? Because you can't say it's full of air, because otherwise then it would be very light, you know? So does that mean from the studies they're... From studying, their brain is expanding and getting very big and heavy, so therefore it's hard to hold up, or... Cow dung's not very heavy either, so like that. So, unless it's fresh cow dung, then maybe it'd be heavy. But dry cow dung is not so heavy. Yeah, very light.
Maybe it's fresh.
Fresh, okay. Like Gaur Mohan, Rajani treated Abhay as the pet child. But whereas her husband expressed his love through leniency and plans for his son's spiritual success, she expressed hers through attempts to safeguard Abhay from all danger, disease, and death. She once offered blood from her breast to one of the demigods, with the supplication that Abai be protected on all sides from danger. At Abai's birth, she had made a vow to eat with her left hand until the day her son would notice and ask her why she was eating with the wrong hand. One day, when little Abai actually asked, she immediately stopped. It had been just another prescription for his survival, for she thought that by the strength of her vow, he would continue to grow, at least until he asked about the vow. Had he not asked, she would never again have eaten with her right hand, and according to her superstition, he would have gone on living protected by her vow. So here you have like what's in between, you know, really traditional kind of like, you know, background and everything like that, and then where you start, you know, creating your own, based on traditions, but, you know, very much more influenced by the kind of local culture like that.
Yeah, it sounds very Bengali.
Yeah, very Bengali like that. But it's, but you know, the main thing is just that she has so much affection that she's trying, you know, by any means to take care and protect him. For his protection, she also put an iron bangle around his leg. His playmates asked him what it was, and Abai self-consciously went to his mother and demanded, "Open this bangle." When she said, "I will do it later," he began to cry, "No, now." Once Abai swallowed a watermelon seed, and his friends told him it would grow in his stomach into a watermelon. He ran to his mother, who assured him he didn't have to worry. She would say a mantra to protect him from the watermelon. Okay.
Rather than bread being a myth, the mantra is going to stop
it. Yeah, the mantra will stop it. Srila Prabhupada. Mother Yashoda would chant mantras in the morning to protect Krishna from all dangers throughout the day. When Krishna killed some demon, she thought it was due to her chanting. My mother would do a similar thing with me. His mother would often take him to the Ganges and personally bathe him. She also gave him a food supplement known as Horlicks. When he got dysentery, she cured it with hot puris and fried eggplant with salt. Like that. So that means it's so hot, both of them, you can hardly touch them. If you eat it like that, then it can get rid of dysentery like that. But if they're any colder than that, they'll probably make it worse. So it means you have to be good cook and sitting right next to the fire. That's what Prabhupada preferred, this all kinds of ways of curing diseases by eating nice food. So Prabhupada would always prefer those methods rather than, you know, nasty tasting medicine or strange diets or anything like that, you know. Like that. But they're all there. There's all things like that. Hot puris and hot fried eggplant.
Also the hot rasgullas?
Yeah, hot rasgullas. When they're after they're made, because they're boiled, they're hot.
Yeah.
And so if you eat them, you know, when they have to cool down enough that you can eat them, but somehow or another the sugar, when it's hot, binds everything in the system. So then it's good. They don't taste, you don't get the full taste, because milk products get more taste as they get cool, like that. And they're very, very, they taste more sweet somehow.
Those hot pores in the hot eggplant, I mean,
sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good, yeah, like that. And then you have your hot rasgullas. You know, what better way to cure dysentery? Yeah. I'm not sure if you have bugs that are causing it, if it'll work, but definitely if there's no bugs, it would work. Though sometimes when he was ill, Abhay would show his obstinacy by refusing to take any medicine. But just as he was stubborn, his mother was determined. And she would forcefully administer medicine into his mouth, though sometimes it took though sometimes it took three assistants to hold him down. You
know, we're talking about a kid this big, you know, so you have three big adult servants holding him down, and his mother is then giving the medicine. So I guess that's the other half of the hot puris and eggplants, is that three guys hold you down while you take your medicine. Srila Prabhupada, I was very naughty when I was a boy. I would break anything. When I was angry, I would break the glass hookah pipes, which my father kept to offer to guests. Once my mother was trying to bathe me, and I refused, and knocked my head on the ground, and blood came out. They came running and said, "What are you doing? You shall kill the child." So then she got the blame, right? Abai was present when his mother observed the ceremony of Sadahotra during the 7th and 9 months of her presence. Oh, of her pregnancies. Freshly bathed, she would appear in new clothing along with her children and enjoy a feast of whatever food she desired, while her husband gave goods and charity to the local brahmanas, who chanted mantras for the purification of the mother and the coming child. Sadahotra. During the 7th and 9 months. Yeah, so this thing of, you know, the pregnant woman, whatever she wants to eat, she gets. But here it would be at two ceremonies rather than all the time eating, you know, pickles or something weird. Abai was completely dependent on his mother. Sometimes she would put his shirt on backwards, and he would simply accept it without mentioning it. Although he was sometimes stubborn, he felt dependent on the guidance and reassurance of his mother. Right? Because the mood was that for the benefit of the child, therefore that's what develops the dependency. It's not something else. Right? So that's what's important, is understanding that if one is committed to the benefit, then there's that the relationship develops, right? But it's for their benefit, right? Father is working spiritual, mother's always seeing to his health and well-being. So then these things then develop the relationship. When he had to go to the privy, he would jump up and down beside her, holding her sari and saying, "Urine, mother, urine." Like that. "Who is stopping you?" she would ask. "Yes, you can go." Only then, with her permission, would he go. Sometimes in the intimacy of dependence, his mother became his foil. What does that mean, foil?
Opposed.
Oh. When he lost a baby tooth and on her advice placed it under a pillow that night, the tooth vanished and some money appeared. Abai gave the money to his mother for safekeeping. But later, when in their constant association, she opposed him, he demanded, "I want my money back." "I will go away from home. Now you give me my money back." Okay. When Rajani wanted her hair braided, she would regularly ask her daughters. But if Abai were present, he would insist on braiding it himself and create such a disturbance that they would give in to him. Once he painted the bottoms of his feet red, imitating the custom of women who painted their feet on festive occasions. His mother tried to dissuade him, saying it was not for children, but he insisted, "No, I must do it also." Abai was unwilling to go to school. "Why should I go?" he thought. "I will play all day." When his mother complained to Gaur Mohan, Abai, sure that his father would be affectionate, said, "No, I shall go tomorrow." Oh, I see, okay. Mother would complain to the father, he's not going to school, so then the father would come, and then Abai, knowing his father would be affectionate, says, okay, I'll go tomorrow. Every day he would say that, right? All right, he will go tomorrow, said Gaur Mohan.
That's all right.
But the next morning, Abai complained that he was sick, and his father indulged him. Rajani became upset because the boy would not go to school, and she hired a man for 4 rupees to escort him there. Right? 4 rupees a month, take him to the school. The man, whose name was Damodar, would tie Abai around the waist with a rope, a customary treatment. Take him to school and present him before his teacher. When Abai would try to run away, Damodar would pick him up and carry him in his arms. After being taken a few times by force, Abai began to go on his own. Abai proved an attentive, well-behaved student, though sometimes he was naughty. Right? Like that. Notice the proportion. It means well-behaved, attentive, though sometimes naughty. Not inattentive and badly behaved, and sometimes, you know, attentive and, you know, like that. Yeah. Get the proportion. Yeah, naughtiness means you have brains, you can think things out. But at the same time, is one should also be able to apply that intelligence into study. Once when the teacher pulled his ear, Abai threw a kerosene lantern to the floor, accidentally starting a fire. Don't mess with Abai. In those days, any common villager, even if illiterate, could recite from the Ramayana, Mahabharata, or Bhagavatam, especially in the villages. Everyone would assemble in the evening to hear from these scriptures. It was for this purpose that Abai's family would sometimes go in the evening to his maternal uncle's house, about 10 miles away, where they would assemble and hear about the Lord's transcendental pastimes. They would return home discussing and remembering them, and then go to bed and dream Ramayana, Mahabharata, and Bhagavatam. After his afternoon rest and bath, Abai would often go to a neighbor's house and look at the black and white pictures in Mahabharata. His grandmother asked him daily to read Mahabharata from a vernacular edition. Thus, by looking at pictures and reading with his grandmother, Abhaya imbibed Mahabharata. In Abhaya's childhood play, his younger sister, Baba Tarini, was often his assistant. Together they would go to see the Radha Govinda deities in the Mullah's temple. In their play, whenever they encountered obstacles, they would pray to God for help. Please, Krishna, help us fly this kite. They would call out as they ran along, trying to put their kite into flight.
Prabhupada was mentioning that they would fly their kite, the two of them, because where's the fruit market now, that would be the area where they go. And that, because they'd be each flying a kite, then they'd want their kite to be higher than the other, you know, brother and sister, you know, always there, like that. So then they'd be praying to Krishna, hey, let my kite go higher, you know, they would go like this.
So they wouldn't be swearing
at each other? No, it seems that, you know, if they want to be better, they'd pray to Krishna that they would be better. So still that, how you say?
Rivalry.
Yeah, the rivalry's there, but it was still
based on
principles. Yeah, Krishna would. Abai's toys included 2 guns, a wind-up car, a cow that jumped when Abai squeezed the rubber bulb attached, and a dog with a mechanism that made it dance. The toy dog was from Dr. Bosch, the family physician, who gave it to him when treating a minor wound on Abai's side. Abai sometimes liked to pretend that he was a doctor, and to his friends he would administer, quote, medicine, which was nothing more than dust. It's a dust. Okay, so it seems to be, you know, standard, right? Like that. Okay. Job.
Om Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.